Mark chapter 16, verses 1 through 8. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go and anoint Jesus' body. There, very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll away the stone from the entrance of the tomb?" When they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. And as they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You are looking for Jesus of the Nazarene, who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him? But go tell the disciples and Peter. He is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him again, just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb, and they said nothing to anyone because they were afraid.
Good morning. Do y'all think that's funny? Oh, I guess not. Remind me to cut that before second service. I think it's funny. If you are here for the first time this year, I'm glad you came. But yes, I am going to speak on the resurrection of Jesus. And that passage that we just read is a description of the cornerstone of Christianity. The resurrection of Jesus coupled with his death are of first importance to the message of Christianity, to the message of the Bible, to the scriptures, and even to life itself. And that is what we're going to talk about today. When the women got to the tomb and they heard these words, "Don't be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here." That was an announcement of the most important event that ever happened. Now, I'm going to speak today from my perspective, and that is that I fully believe that Jesus was actually and bodily raised from the dead. And I'm going to focus on the meaning of that. I realize there may be some of you who wrestle with that. And if you wrestle with that, I want to encourage you to wrestle with it. It's important to deal with it and think about it and read the accounts and pray and talk to people. This is of such importance that it is imperative that we wrestle with it honestly, until we come to a faith that Jesus really was raised from the dead. But this morning I'm going to assume that because that's what I believe and focus instead on the meaning of this profound event. Now, I may have been inside that tomb. Maybe. I kind of doubt it, but maybe, because as you know, if you go to this church, we went to Israel in the fall, and we went to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and saw a part of that, and then we went to another site that is also considered to be the place where Jesus was crucified, and last week I showed you a picture of that. This is not a picture. This is a part of a tourist map. But over there on the right, you can see maybe some eye sockets. There's a rock wall that has an eerie image of a skull in the rock wall. And a lot of people think that is the place of the skull where Jesus was crucified. And I'm showing you a tourist map to show you how close the tomb is to that rock wall. If you look over in the upper left-hand corner, there is a tomb that was carved out of the rock, and it's near a garden in the bottom right, really close to the tomb. And that's how John describes it. And so this may be the tomb of Jesus. Again, we don't know. And yet, when we visited over there, this tomb, I can't believe I'm going to say this, this tomb felt like the right place. I'm not a touchy-feely guy, but it felt like the right place, I think because it's so pristine, and it's not all grown up like the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. But that's it. There on the left, you can see some repairs were made just to the right of the door at a later time. And you can go into that tomb. And if you do, you'll end up in this room on the left, the big room, number 6. It's a weeping chamber. People would go in and weep. And on the right, at the top and at the bottom, number 4, are places where bodies were laid, bodies of people who had died. And if you go into room number 6, there on the left, and you look to your right, and don't forget that when they entered the tomb, they looked to their right and they saw an angel. But if you look to your right, you see that. The bars, of course, were added later. There's an inscription on the back wall that was added later. But on the left and on the right is where bodies were laid. And if you get a view from inside the gate, it looks like that. And that may be where Jesus' body was laid. Again, a part of me thinks, surely I didn't get to go to the place where that happened. There's some questions about this place and the other place. But the thing that these sites do is they make it vivid. They make you feel something about the great events that took place. But what is most important is not the place where they happen, but what God did in the death and resurrection of Jesus. And this morning I want to talk about part of the meaning of the resurrection. And that is that it shows us that Jesus is truly unique. There's no one else like him. He's one of a kind. During his lifetime, he made the remarkable claim that he was going to be killed and then he would rise from the dead. That's an astonishing claim. At some point, you're going to have to either back that up or you're going to be shown to be a fraud. And yet Jesus did make that astonishing claim. It's recorded 3 times in the Gospel of Mark, and we looked at those as we studied through the Gospel of Mark. And sure enough, on the 3rd day, he did rise from the dead, which shows that he is trustworthy. You can believe him. If he said he would rise from the dead and he didn't, he would be shown to be a fraud. And you could ignore him and ignore everything he said. But if he makes a claim that astonishing and then it happens, it adds credence to everything he ever said and shows that he is trustworthy. A second thing that shows the uniqueness of Jesus is that when God raised him from the dead, he vindicated Jesus. And the scriptures are clear that God raised him from the dead. He didn't just rise or raise himself from the dead. God raised him from the dead. And in so doing, he set his seal of approval on him and vindicated him, showed him to be true and right. It would be very difficult to think Jesus was the Son of God while he was being mocked and ridiculed and crucified. We don't think criminals are prophets for the most part. We don't think convicted criminals are prophets. We don't think executed criminals are prophets. And certainly not one who was executed in such a humiliating fashion. It would have been really difficult to believe the claims of Jesus on the day that he was crucified. But God reversed all of that by raising him from the dead. And the early spokesman made a big deal out of that over and over again. I think it's 6 or 7 times in the book of Acts, the early proclaimers would say, "You killed him, but God raised him from the dead." Or, "They killed him, but God raised him from the dead." And what that is a contrast between the human view of Jesus and the divine view of Jesus. God's view is that Jesus needed to be raised from the dead. And when he raised him from the dead, he vindicated him. And that too shows his uniqueness. A third thing that shows the uniqueness of Jesus at the resurrection is that the resurrection defanged death. Now I'm using the word defanged because we're Texans and we don't know the word sting. The word in the Bible in 1 Corinthians 15 is, "In light of resurrection, where, O death, is your sting?" And we're Texans and we think that word is stinger, not sting. But it's talking about a hornet or a wasp that has its sting removed. That's a thing. We call it a stinger. Okay? And 1 Corinthians 15 is saying the sting of death is gone. But I thought we might connect a little better to defanged. In either case, if you're talking about a snake or about a hornet, you may be a little uncomfortable, but there's nothing permanently harmful there. And so what Jesus did when he was raised from the dead is he softened or downgrades death to sleep. He defangs the snake. He removes the sting, and death becomes sleep. And that's the way the early Christians in the New Testament described it. There is sleep, but we will be awakened again. And so in light of the fact that Jesus' remarkable claims came true and he seemed to be trustworthy, in light of the fact that God vindicated him by raising him from the dead, and in light of the fact that Jesus defanged death and downgraded it to sleep, Jesus is utterly unique. And through those things, you can see his true identity, which is that he is the Son of God. And so Paul writes in Romans 1, verse 4, that he was declared with power to be the Son of God by his resurrection from the dead. And Peter, on the first day that anybody proclaimed the whole Christian message in Acts chapter 2, talks about the resurrection, quotes scripture about the resurrection, and then comes to his conclusion, which is, "Therefore, let all the house of Israel know that this Jesus whom you crucified, God has made both Lord and Christ." The resurrection of Jesus shows that he is utterly unique, one of a kind, and his true identity is that he is the Son of God. His resurrection not only shows him to be truly unique, however, it also calls us to be unique. Not the same unique as him, but unique nonetheless. Let me share a little bit of that. I mentioned a while ago that Jesus' claims coming true show that he's trustworthy. So our part is to trust him. And it's not just believing that he was raised from the dead. That's the cornerstone. But it's also believing what that tells us. And what that tells us is he's trustworthy, and therefore we need to trust him. Now, some of us grew up hearing a lot of people talking about the need to trust Christ, and we felt like maybe they took that to an extreme. And so we started talking about how much we need to obey Christ. And then sometimes we took that to an extreme. And they start thinking, well, you got to trust Christ. And the answer is yes. You got to trust Christ and trust him so much that you obey him and that you follow him. What he wants is not just lip service trust. And what he wants is not mere obedience. What he wants is obedience that emerges from faith. And if you believe that he is the Lord, if you believe that he is the Christ, if you believe that he is the Son of God, then you obey him. And if you do that, that makes you unique. Because the way most people live their lives today, including way too many of us Christians, is that we live by our feelings, or we live by our desires, or we live by our passions, or some few live by their logic, or we live by what the media says, or what social media and our friends say. But if we live with Jesus as Lord, as indicated by the resurrection, that will make us unique. We're also unique because we have a unique hope. We have a hope that we and our loved ones are going to be raised from the dead and live with God forever. Jesus' resurrection was not just for him, it's also for us. And it tells us that we too are going to be raised from the dead. Death is not the end. Death is sleep. And we will be awakened from that sleep. And we have a hope for that. And I'm painfully aware today that some of us have a very vivid hope that some of the ones that we've lost recently or long ago will be raised from the dead and we'll get to see them again. The Christian hope is not primarily here and now. The Christian hope is primarily there and then. Here we have no lasting city, but we are looking for the city that is to come. Our citizenship is in heaven. Now, in former days, some Christians put so much focus on heaven that they were open to the charge of being so heavenly minded that they were no earthly good. And that's not right. But today I feel like we're in danger of the opposite, that we're so focused on the here and now that we lose sight of our true hope in heaven. The truth is that if we follow Jesus, some things in our life will be better, and some things will be harder. Life's going to be hard either way. You're going to suffer either way. But some things will actually be harder if we follow Jesus. The scriptures are clear about that. I think the balance is that our hope is there and then in heaven. But that hope affects the way we live in the here and now. Got to keep the two connected together. Our hope for the future gives us hope in the face of the difficulties of the present. And it gives us joy in the present. And it gives us endurance in the present. And if I could speak a little bit personally just for a minute, that's the part of this I most need. I believe he was raised from the dead. I believe I'm going to be raised from the dead. I believe we're going to get to be together with God in heaven. But somehow I have trouble assimilating that into hope and optimism in the here and now. I'd like to blame it on how many problems I know about from being a minister. I'd like to blame it on my personality type. I'd like to blame it on my own problems. And I'll tell you about my problems if you want to hear them. But I think the problem is that I'm not assimilating the hope that is very real properly. And that's the part of it I want to pay more attention to. One other way I think this should affect us, I thought of by reading this text. It seems like the last verse of the book of Mark is verse 8. Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. I was going to start this off, and I followed the when in doubt, leave it out rule. But I couldn't leave it out altogether, so I'm going to tell you now. I just decided it was a bad way to start. My dad died about 5 years ago. My mom, longer than that. Me and my siblings got together down where my dad lived often in his last days. But once he died, we didn't get together again for almost 5 years. And then a month or two ago, we got all the brothers together, all the siblings, together for a reunion. And I was going to tell you about that, and we talked, and we ate, and we had fun. And by the way, my dad was raised from the dead, and we got to visit with him too. I wanted to say that just to kind of stun you a little bit and make you go, huh? But I decided that probably wasn't in real good taste. But my point in telling that is, when somebody rises from the dead, you don't mention that in passing as an afterthought. That is an astonishing thing. I know we've heard about it for a long, long time. I know it's not brand new news today, but it still is an astonishing thing. And it's really not right to say nothing to anyone about it. And yet, a lot of times you and I don't say anything to anyone about it either. And a lot of times it's because we're afraid. And a lot of times it's because we've grown dull to its power and to its wonder. And so I thought maybe one other way that it ought to affect us that I could leave us as a little bit of a challenge is, instead of saying nothing to anyone, is to ask you to say something to someone. And I don't want to put guilt on us or make us feel ashamed. That's not the point of this. So let me say this real carefully. I want to challenge us to pray that God will give us an opportunity to say something to someone, and that we'll see it, and that we'll say something. You don't have to preach to them in that kind of setting. In fact, I don't recommend it in those conversational kinds of settings. But just say something. Pray that God will give an opportunity. Watch for the opportunities, and if he gives you one, just say something to someone. Those are some of the ways that it should affect us. And there's more, of course. We're going to sing a song, And the song gives us a chance to tell the story. We've been telling the story for a few weeks now, or a few years, depending on how you count. But we're going to tell each other the story, and the chorus is going to tell some of the meaning of the story. And so today we get to proclaim the story together. And while we sing that song, if you want to talk to somebody or pray with somebody about the resurrection of Christ or about anything else going on in your life, we'll have some of our leaders and their wives at the back. But let's stand and tell the story together.